cliffcentral.com. The following business conversation is brought to you by Trudon, the publisher of the Yellow Pages and proud supporter of small business in South Africa.
Hello. Hi, Dave from A1 Builders in Pretoria.
Yeah.
It's Dan. I found your number on the internet and I need you to build me a room, the purpose of which I cannot disclose.
What?
Fine. It's a sunroom. Can you start immediately?
It's 4 a.m.
I'm sure it's 4 a.m. somewhere, Dave, but here in SA, it's 10.
You mean USA?
There's more than one Pretoria out there. For the quickest and most efficient way to find what you're looking for, start your search with yellowpages.co.za or download the app. Yellow Pages, for local, reliable results.
Welcome, everybody, to the Leadership Platform Small Medium Business Leadership Feature. I'm Richard Angus, hosting the show today for Adrian Groenewald, who's out of town for the balance of the week. Today, we're going to be talking about best practice to win tenders and contracts and what you should be thinking about as a business owner in that space. Joining me in studio today is Bruce Krieff. He is the owner of Warrod Associates. Warrod is a management and IT consulting company that exists to enable organizations and their people to understand and articulate business and technology issues in support of decision making. Their ability to integrate business and IT strategies with an appropriate solution and design things to differ is their differentiating capability. So welcome, Bruce. Thank you for taking the time to join us today.
Hello, Richard.
However, before we get on to that, we're going to be talking to Catherine on the line, who's going to give us an inspirational thought. Hi, Catherine.
Good morning. Great to chat to you.
Great to chat
to you. And basically, my inspirational thought revolves around the theme of courage, because I think in business, sometimes we're really very scared and apprehensive to do things that we believe in. And to build an SME and to build a large corporation, you really need courage. You need courage to be able to stand in the face of the fear that you feel, because those are the things that are going to not only grow who you are, grow you as a leader, but they're also going to grow the comfort zone that you sit in. And your life really unfolds in proportion to the courage you have. And I think it's something that we forget, but once again, it goes back to self-development, and courage is a great part of that. And any good leader needs to have courage to move his team forward.
I couldn't agree with you more there, Catherine. I think one of the greatest things in life is having courage to take on the challenge in small business. Lee, welcome. Thanks for joining us. I think one of the things that Catherine points out there around courage actually ties very nicely with today's theme, because talking about tenders and having the courage to actually put it out there and put your business out there and go out in a formal tendering process is probably one of the more daunting things that you as a business owner you can do. So thank you, Catherine. That's really, really apt for today's conversation, to have the courage to perhaps do something a little different in the world of tendering, perhaps. And then there's a number of other areas where courage is just the essence of what small business is about. I think, just to Catherine, in closing there, I don't think any small business survives without the courage to get up in the morning, know what you're about, and actually make it happen. And I think that does take courage, because the task is great and the challenges are many. So thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
No, it's great. And I hope that I'm sure that the show today will encourage people to go out, be courageous, and make sure that you don't become complacent with where you're at, because those tenders might seem daunting and big, but absolutely nothing's impossible.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Catherine. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Richard, just a thought. Looking back over many years involved with leadership, the thing about courage is that it shortens your agenda. You know, it takes a lot of nonsense out of it, because if you don't have courage, you've got to compensate with other aspects, and there's gall and people don't trust you. So courage, it really shortens your agenda in life, so it focuses your energies. It's an incredibly important attribute.
The courage to be truthful and honest with oneself is perhaps the biggest one of all.
Yes, agree with
so
that.
You know, can I do this, should I do this, and having the courage to actually be honest with oneself before you're even honest with anybody else out there and say, yeah, I've got what it takes to do this, or no, I need to prepare a little better, I need to do something else, I need to ask for help, whatever it may be. So yeah, courage is, yeah, starts, yes. What do they say? Everything good starts at home.
But from a practical point of view, there's tremendous amount of baggage you carry with you if you're not courageous. And this, so it's a, from a practical point of view, it's really a waste of precious time.
Exactly, exactly. Okay, well, talking about having courage, let's talk about having the courage to enter into that murky world of the tender. We've talked in earlier shows about a number of different business principles and elements that we've looked at as small for smaller businesses and for small business. Principles such as identifying what your core value proposition is, understanding what your business is about, how you position yourself to your market. But I guess this is now where the rubber really hits the road in the world of determining should you accept an invitation from somebody or from a potential client out there to get involved with them at a on a formal basis. I think we often, and I'd like to just clarify some terms. Bruce, help me out here as we can. There's, you know, you'll hear people talking about, oh, well, there's an RFI out, and then there's an RFP, and this is a tender, and this is part of a tendering process. Bruce, what is an RFI? What is that thing? What is those lovely, we all love our acronyms. What is an RFI?
Like with all things, procurement generally follows a process. And the companies that are going out to tender and to award what generally is for them a fairly large project will generally go to market and first discover what's available and who they should be talking to. So in general, if you want to be involved in a tender and you haven't been involved in the RFI, you're a little Johnny come lately.
Okay, so RFI stands for Request for Information.
It's a request for information. The company will go to the market to find out who does what and how could they approach whatever project or initiative they're trying to address.
Okay. So I think that's quite important to understand that there's an RFP, which is a request for proposal, and an RFI. An RFI is not asking for give me the price on something. It's actually asking for you as a potential supplier to give them a little bit of insight into what you can provide and what's out there in the market. Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah, a lot of the projects or initiatives where you would go to tender involve more complex solutions and involve innovation on the part of the purchasing company. So they're going to find out what they don't know. Okay. And that may include indicative pricing, but it won't include anything resembling a firm price.
Okay, so I think that's a crucial thing to understand, is that when you're looking at what items should be purchased through a tendering process, I think we often think of we're buying things or buying commodities in a tendering type of process. In fact, you actually should be able, or you can split the tendering process into two parts almost. You've got tendering for commoditized types of product. You know, I always use the good old example of toothpaste and toilet paper. Yep. You don't really need to know the information. You just need to know the specifications. And once you know what specifications you need, no problem, you're sorted. And you can go out to tender, you stipulate what the specifications are, and you ask for pricing, and it is, unfortunately, often that type of tendering is more, let's call it, price and product-led. The second type of tender, which is the one that, Bruce, you're alluding to, is the whole tender of we've got to achieve an outcome through something, a project perhaps, or some initiative. We don't quite know how to do that, so can you please give us some information and a proposal of exactly how you would go about doing and securing the company that desired outcome. So the two, I think we should distinguish those two types of tenders, and they are very different because the one in particular is very, very IP, intellectual property focused, and I guess that's where, Bruce, you've got a lot of experience with your company, where it's about that intellectual property and that knowledge transfer from the person being asked to tender and the company receiving the tender. Now, I mean, I would imagine it's quite important to meet with the people that you're going to be tendering with if you want to do this request for information properly. And I mean, you're doing a full analysis there, Bruce.
Yeah, it's one of the risks you actually play, specifically as a small business, that you could find yourself investing an enormous amount of money in something which you're not qualified for. Mm-hmm. And yes, a lot of the tenders that are out there, from everything from the, you know, the government gazette down, are for things which are very well defined and easy to quantify and so on. There are not that many SMEs who can compete effectively in that, because usually when they're going to market for that kind of service, they're looking for scale. Okay. So you find that you may be at a disadvantage there, for instance, tendering against a national player or whatever. So you need to be careful to understand what is it that they're asking for. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, if you haven't gone and spoken to the people, you don't understand what they're trying to achieve. A lot of the bigger businesses will, in fact, try to advantage smaller businesses. Mm-hmm. So they'll go to tender and intentionally be looking for SMEs.
Okay.
So again, it's something to understand what they're trying to achieve, not just what they're going to buy.
Mm. So to link back to our earlier show, education show, this sounds like that good old adage that we always say to somebody who's writing an exam, read the question. So understand what the question is that's being posed, what the problem is that the client needs, and actually be ready to solve that particular problem. And it's not just a case of throw something at the wall and hope that something sticks, which I think sometimes, you know, people think they, you know, they read the first part of the tender and go, oh, we can do that, and then discover that in fact they perhaps can't, and there's some issues with that. Okay, so your advice would be make sure you know you, and it's not so much, I guess, a question of meeting with the people. It's about understanding what the issues are in whatever format that needs to take. So, do you need to do a site visit? Do you need to spend time with the people? What is the level of understanding that you need to gain? So, that's an important part of tendering that one needs to think about. Is there a place that people go to look for tenders per se, and where do people place tenders? What's your experience? Where do you pick up tender opportunities?
That's a difficult question to answer because it very much depends on which market you're in, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there are a number of publications, traditionally the newspapers. There are a couple of websites which provide this kind of information. And a lot of the bigger corporates actually have their own, if you like, portal,
okay,
where registered suppliers, and you don't actually have to be a formally registered supplier, but you need to have expressed an interest and registered on their site, and you can provide or you can obtain the information from them.
Okay. So I think there, and I mean, your hesitancy as you started answering that question actually plays to the real fundamental issue that people have with tendering, is it's difficult to get this right if you don't know where to go to as a starting point. So part of the tendering process is knowing and understanding the types of markets that you could service, yeah, and where they would go to list their requirements if they have. So if you're in, say, for example, financial services or providing services into the financial services sectors, you need to be monitoring all of the websites from a procurement perspective with all of the major institutions, for example, if you want to be playing with them, because that's where they're going to place their requirements, is probably in their procurement domains on these various websites. You need to be looking at places like the Government Gazette if you're looking for government work. You need to be looking at your daily newspapers for tender requests, etc. So unfortunately for the SME out there, there's no one, let's call it yellow pages, where you could go to one place and you'd have a registry of tenders. Unfortunately, that isn't the case.
No, but there is actually a strategy that a small business can use quite effectively in this, in that a lot of the very large corporates, the listed companies and so on, tend to purchase from a restricted number of suppliers. Those suppliers can't be everything to everybody. They can't supply all the needs that the big corporation wants to procure. So they often look for smaller suppliers to work with them, and they will get closed tenders, or they will be notified of a tender and be invited to bring partners. So sometimes quite a good strategy is to know who the major suppliers are to the companies in the market you want to address and to form relationships with them.
Okay, so the principle of partnering comes through here.
Yeah.
And I think that's a leadership principle that we've always talked about. as an essence, is making sure you know who your good partners are, people that you can build relationships of trust with, and people that you could then you can do quality work with and through. That's quite an important element. Okay, so what determines if you're going to bid for a tender? What are some of the things that one should consider, Bruce? I mean, give us some of your experience there. What are the things that you should be thinking about as a business?
Okay, so I'll maybe share a learning experience I had many years ago when I was running a small distribution company for enterprise content management software and the storage systems that went with it. And we tendered for work with a listed company, having not been involved in the RFI, so we didn't actually understand what was being involved. And we provided what we knew was a very good solution design for the customer and didn't get the business. And we're invited by the CIO for a debriefing where he very quietly, and I thought it was very kind of him and certainly very helpful to us, he explained to us why we were unselectable, despite having the best technical solution, the best price, and the best design of solution. And it was quite simple. We weren't selectable because of their project risk. They were going to be running a many, many millions of rand project, and I was running a company of 15 employees, and we simply were at too big a disparity between their national listed company and a strategic project for them and our little company. They had every confidence that we could deliver. They weren't sure, though, that from a risk perspective, if something went wrong, they could balance this.
So basically, they couldn't sue you for millions.
They couldn't sue us for millions if we went wrong, yes.
So I think that's an important learning, because often in big projects of that go out to tender, the important thing is knowing how to manage the risks. And there is risk management that has to happen both from the supplier side as well as from the person putting out the tender, the client. And if you're not comfortable that the person who's providing you the service has as much skin in the game as you do as the potential entity, if it goes wrong, well, then the scales of this procurement scenario are a little unbalanced. And that's an important learning that you're sharing there with us.
So you have to be sure that you are selectable.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have to be very careful with the customer. You could bid on work, which could put you out of business. Because if your customer and some of the bigger tendering organizations, the bigger customers in the country have this, they have unpredictable cash flows, they sometimes have inefficient administrations, they sometimes have externally dependent or determined budget cycles, and with all the best intentions in the world, they could take 6 months to pay you. If you can't handle the cash flow, and you're the financial man, you would know this, you're out of business no matter how good you are.
Yeah. So no matter how good the winning tender is, the reality is that cash is king, and cash flow management and working capital management, as we've spoken of in previous shows, actually starts to play a role here. So if you tender for a piece of work, you've basically got to make sure that the tender doesn't affect your other remaining clients and let's call it the rest of your business in such a way that it almost dwarfs. You know, we often talk about the principle of the guppy swallowing the whale type of scenario. If you're trying to swallow this massive tender and you suddenly get indigestion at an inappropriate moment, this could be a very, very uncomfortable scenario to face as a businessman, where your cash is tied up in a very good tender with a very good client, but it just doesn't unlock, and it could have serious implications on your business's existence.
Yeah, and it can definitely affect your sustainability as well, because if you're committing too many resources to this, let's say you were successful and you won this really major tender, and it now uses 80 or 90% of your resources for 4 months, 5 months, what happened to all of your existing business and customers? If you've now alienated them by giving them bad service because you couldn't scale your business, you've now won a tender, but you might also be putting your business at risk.
Yeah. Well, I think that's also the principle of putting all your eggs in one basket, per se.
Yeah.
You know, if all of your eggs are in that particular tender basket and you're successful in your tender, what happens the next time around? So you might, and I think that's also this principle of sustainability and longevity. So you might be okay for the first round of tendering, but now your tender is now 80% of your business, 80% of your revenue flows. Your people are all involved with the tender, and 3 years later, the tender now comes around. You lose the tender on the second round for whatever reason it may be, and suddenly your business is out of business.
Yeah. So people sometimes get into this boom and bust cycle. You know, very busy on this tender, and then they've got nothing to replace it. So you have to try and balance it. And that's one of the things that the tender issuer will also look at, you know. Having been there, they didn't want to deal with us because they would have been that customer.
They would have been the big one. So it's about concentration risk and making sure that there's a level of almost comfort with the ability to scale with of the tenderor and the tenderee, as it so be. Okay, how important is it to... You know, I mean, we talk about tenders and price always comes up in a tender. I think that's, you know, people often think tender equals price. Those are the kind of synonymous engagements that we often have. I mean, how important is price in determining what happens in a tender? Is it critical? You know, what about tendering to get volumes and what about profitability? What's your experience in that space? What can you share with us?
So I can talk from both sides because of the services we offer. We actually end up assisting with developing RFIs and evaluating RFIs and RFPs and participating in them from the other side. And one of the things to understand is that when you get to this kind of business, price is not actually the most important thing for most businesses certainly in the innovation side or in the often in the software or the services business. If it's a commodity type of thing, yes, it is. Price is always a big issue. But sometimes the price may be ranked as third or fourth priority and as low as 15% in my experience.
Okay. Now you talk of ranking. I think it's quite important that we just talk for a moment about how tenders are evaluated because there's actually a ranking system that companies use. And I mean, you've just let it out there that price was often fourth on that list of criteria. What are some of the other things that are on that list of criteria? Because I think that's the you know, kind of the answer to the question that every entrepreneur kind of says is, if I only knew what they were evaluating me on, I would be able to answer all their questions properly.
Which is why you have to talk to them first to understand what they're trying to achieve and to understand what rules they're playing by. Because, for instance, if you're dealing with a state-owned enterprise, they have very specific development objectives that they are obliged to follow. You may be dealing with a company which is wanting a truly innovative solution. If you're not careful, you may find yourself being the party who got invited to make up the ranks so as to set a low price level that once the other risk, solution, compatibility, ability to deliver, possibly product features have all been ranked and assessed, now they can negotiate based on your price. With the person they give the business to. So you need to be careful to understand, you know, that there's one of those famous sayings that says, if you look around the room and you don't know who the fool is, you're it.
Okay, that's a very – and I think that's very relevant in the world of tendering is
yes.
Knowing what the cost of the tender is in terms of what it's going to take you to actually – put the tender together, and we, you know, back to Catherine's point about this morning about courage, maybe it's having the courage to put your company out there and tender, you know, in a good opportunity, but also having the courage to say, thank you very much for the invitation, but I do not see myself doing business with you, XYZ company. So thank you very much for the invitation, but we will not be submitting a proposal. And I think sometimes, you know, we as business people, we almost feel obliged to respond with an offer and a proposal when somebody asks us for one. And maybe the answer in life is, and I've definitely seen this in my own business, is, you know, you kind of sit back and say, should I be submitting a proposal here? Can I reasonably do business with these individuals? Have I got the skills? Have we got everything that it takes? Can we make a success of this? Or is there potentially going to be an issue and I'm wasting my energy and their energy, and thus I should be walking away from this proposal and not giving them that opportunity to lowball me with somebody else and just use me as a tool in that. Just in closing, Bruce, what are some of the other critical things that should be in a tender document? What are some of the things that people are looking for?
Well, you always have to establish your credibility. So customers want to know, or the tender issuer wants to know, do you have the experience? They want to know that you have the necessary financial stability and viability, so they want financial information. They'll want some level of satisfaction that you have the necessary resources in terms of people and equipment and so on, depending on what you're doing as well. And then they generally want to see some kind of a track record. So referenceable previous work is always a good part to be able to do.
Yeah, and I think just on that, I think that's crucial, because that's often the stumbling block for a company is that, and people must realize that winning a tender is not your first client, because the tender is going to require other clients as your reference spot. So you need to actually have gone out there and have a few good quality clients that you've serviced well, that are happy with your solutions, and that you can really use as the reference before you can get to that first significant tender. And I think that's, you know, we always say, you know, chicken and egg. Well, in this case, we know tender comes later. New clients come first.
You should only be bidding on this kind of work when you're sure how it's going to develop your business, rather than to try and establish your business doing it, because that's a very high-risk approach.
Exactly, exactly. Well, Bruce, thank you very much. We really appreciate your time. Louis, any final thoughts there on what we've heard today?
Thinking back, Richard, as a young person, I was involved in many tenders, but this discussion has been very fruitful. I wonder how many tenders I lost as a middle manager at the time, because I didn't appreciate the necessity to look at these points. We appreciate it a great deal. So you need to invest. Often tenders are delegated, and a lot of boilerplating is put in, and I wonder how many people lose out because of it. You need to know the person who issues the tender. Also need to check the validity and authority of the things they require. Thanks. That's been pretty useful. Worthwhile.
Bruce, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate your insights. Thank you very much.
Nice to be here.
Visit the leadershipplatform.com for all things leadership. Next up in the Leadership Masterclass, Rich Simmons will be joined by Dr. Darren Green and Nalene Cochin of The Pink Drive and the brother company More Balls Than Most. This conversation was brought to you by Trudon. Visit trudonhome.co.za for all your small business marketing needs. Trudon, it's our business to grow your business.
Ivan Cleanus, Worcester. Conrad speaking.
Hi, Conrad. This is Chad from the Glen Gables Hotel in Worcester. We're looking for a new cleaning service. I found your number on the internet. Would you be interested?
Yeah, flip, great. Where are your offices?
Well, on the corner of Alaho and Aldo, across from the Beef Cack and Tag Shack.
Cack and what?
There's more than one Worcester out there. Reach a more relevant audience by advertising with the Yellow Pages. Visit yellowpages.co.za and get listed online with South Africa's most trusted business directory. Yellow Pages, for local, reliable results.